Welcome to Short Ops. Derek Van Riper here with Bernie Pleskov, wishing you a happy new year, the first episode here of 2015. Bernie, how's it going today?
Hey, it's going great, Derek. You know, we drove home from New Year's Eve. We were out partying on New Year's Eve. Drove in Phoenix towards our house, and there was snow on the mountains. What a beautiful sight, and very rare for us to see snow. So it was just incredible. People drove to that area about 30 minutes from here north and took their kids who had never seen snow before. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I heard there was some snow in San Diego over New Year's as well. I mean, you never hear about that, but Arizona is pretty rare too. And I was in western Michigan where we got a little bit of lake effect snow, but not nearly as much as you'd expect. There was nothing on the ground as I got there on Sunday. But Bernie, it's been actually a pretty quiet week of transactions and what has been a very busy offseason overall. We're going to break down the few moves that have happened, and then we're going to take a look at the American League team by team and give each team a grade to this point in the offseason. We'll look at some things that we like, some things we don't like each team has done, and maybe talk about what each team could do here as we move through the final stages of this offseason. Just about 5 or 6 weeks away from spring training now, so definitely looking forward to getting that going, just to get some more news and different types of news, aside from getting a chance to watch a lot of players in person. The biggest trade since we last spoke, Bernie, was between the Phillies and the Reds. Marlon Byrd going to Cincinnati. Prospect pitcher Ben Lively going back the other way to Philadelphia. I can't figure out what the Reds are doing. I mean, they keep trading away veteran pieces, and then they go ahead and get Marlon Byrd. Like, what's the angle here?
Well, I guess they think they need outfield help until Jesse Winker is ready, and I think he's close to being ready. But Byrd is a stopgap measure, maybe for a year, maybe two at the most. They think he can still hit. I don't know. Instead of getting younger, they got a bit older. And quite frankly, I like Lively. I think he's a good pitcher. I think he had a chance, you know, to make their rotation in an emergency basis if he had stayed in Cincinnati. And I think his stock just rose being with Philadelphia. So it kind of puzzled me, but you know, Marlon Byrd is a cat with nine lives. He has been all over the place, but, Derek, he has hit everywhere he's played. So it's kind of shocking, but not shocking.
I mean, you got to like the fact that he's still in a hitter-friendly park. He's one of those players that, from a fantasy standpoint, a lot of people don't want to own him because he's old. He's had that late surge in power where he's really started to strike out a lot more in exchange for becoming a 20-home run guy more consistently. He hit 20 home runs once in his career back in 2009 before doing it in back-to-back years here in 2013 and 2014. Just a very strange path that he's taken to get to this point, but a career-high 29% strikeout rate last year for Marlon Byrd, even more so than 2013 when he had that sort of late breakout. I assume he's going to play left field for Cincinnati. They're going to keep Jay Bruce in right. If you look at their lineup, it's not that much different than it was a year ago. I think the big difference for them is going to be having a healthy Joey Votto and presumably a healthy Bruce. You add Marlon Byrd, it solves that left field problem for 1 year. It enables this team to wait 1 year on bringing up Jesse Winker. If they were to fall out of contention, Byrd's the kind of player they could probably trade in July to a team looking for an upgrade, so it's probably not a bad move. I think it really hinges on what Ben Lively becomes. He's a player that I've seen shoot up prospect rankings lists over the last 12 months. I think I saw him up in the top 50 overall on a couple of the lists that I looked at. And then I read some reports that suggest that he's more of a number four, number five starter. What's your take on Lively long term? Is there more upside than that of a back end starter?
Yes, I think so. I just wrote him up in the Reds overview of prospects on the brink, and then I had to pull him out of there. I do think his upside is as a three. No pun intended. He does have a lively arm, and he's very solid. I don't think you're going to see a lot of ups and downs. You know, you're going to have that transition period when he faces quality big league hitting, but I think eventually he's going to settle in very nicely as a rotation starter. This was a very good move for Philadelphia. I at first heard it was more than just Lively, but that's not true. It's Cash and that pitcher. And Derek, one thing in 2015, we can no longer use the word old. We have to use something like chronologically advanced. You know, Bird is chronologically advanced, but he wears that advancement very well. He does. He's a bit on the heavy side, as we know. And I think Hamilton is going to have his work cut out for him running around that outfield, to tell you the truth. He will probably shade a little bit closer to left field, but he's got the speed that can close quickly because Bird is not the fastest.
It's a small outfield, too, so I think that actually helps the Reds a little bit in terms of having guys with less range in the corner, specifically Bird now in left. Now, this leaves the Phillies with a pretty weak outfield. It was weak to begin with. As it projects right now, and things could certainly change, you're looking at Grady Sizemore getting a lot of playing time in left field, Dominic Brown probably moving over to right, Jeff Francoeur is in the mix there. I mean, a lot of blasts from the past in terms of the guys battling for spot time in the corners. Ben Revere is probably going to play every day in center, although his playing time on a couple of occasions last year started to fall off, so I'm not sure they're necessarily done with their offseason moves, but we can talk more about the Phillies next week when we break down the National League side. Let's talk about a couple other trades that went down over the past week. The Padres, surprisingly, were involved in two of the three that we're going to talk about over the next little while here. The Padres acquired Brandon Maurer for Seth Smith. And we talked about the Padres and the number of extra outfielders they had. You knew there was going to be at least one move, but there's probably another one or two coming to clear up some of that depth. Seth Smith goes to Seattle. He's going to platoon with Justin Ruggiano. That's actually a pretty good platoon when you look at what those guys have done in their careers working in that in sort of different tandem arrangements.
You know, this was a terrific deal for Seattle, in my opinion. I am a huge Seth Smith fan. He is a very good platoon player. When teams color between the lines and don't try to ask him to do more than he can do, He's a very good piece and lengthens that lineup. I do like that move considerably. Now, we don't know who Maurer is yet. You know, I've seen him pitch. I saw him pitch in spring training when he broke camp in the rotation. He still, to me, is in development. Now, I don't know if he's stepping in to the Padres rotation. I still think there's work to be done on his command consistency. He's got a very good arm, and I think he could be a year away from being in the rotation, and it's only because of inconsistencies right now, because the ball moves, he's got a lively arm, another good deal for both teams, but I like what the Mariners got out of this. This is an outstanding lineup that every pitcher is going to have to navigate through.
The previous regime in San Diego had given Seth Smith a contract extension, so I think part of the appeal for San Diego, with all the money they've added in the trades this year, they're saving some money in this trade also by moving Seth Smith. But Maurer is the guy that you do want to take a flyer on, even though he's still in development. At the very least, he looks like a very good late-inning reliever to me. I mean, I think that's the floor, and the ceiling could actually be that of maybe a mid-rotation starter if everything clicks. I don't know if he'll ever get there, but last year, once he made that move to the bullpen, he had a 2.17 ERA, 38 strikeouts against 5 walks in 37 and a third innings, and opposing hitters hit just .214 against him.
Well, that's the kind of guy you want on your roster with that kind of arm that can swing either way. By next year, he could be in the rotation, or 2 years from now, you always can use him in the pen because, like I said, it's just inconsistency. It's not bad command or control. He just doesn't repeat his delivery every pitch, and that causes, you know, the ball to float out of the strike zone. But he does have a good arm, and it was a good deal for San Diego. They still have Maben, unless I'm mistaken. And, you know, he's a pretty good center fielder. I have a feeling, and I said this last week, why, you know, if you could get something for Brett Myers, you might, or not Brett Myers.
Will Myers.
Will Myers. Why not do that, you know? He's not a proven center fielder. You've got two of them. You got Will Venable there. I think Myers could be the guy that's on the move, but so far, not yet. But one of those guys is going.
Yeah, talk we'd heard about Cole Hamels possibly being moved in another Will Myers trade seems to have cooled for now. That's the kind of deal that the Padres could pull it off. I think that really puts them in a great position here for 2015. So we'll see if Will Myers remains in San Diego as we move closer to the start of spring training. The other trade the Padres made was a relatively small one. They acquired Sean Kelly from the Yankees for a reliever named Johnny Barbato. I look at Sean Kelly, and I think this is actually a nice addition because when you're looking at what the Padres had built before, there were really two questions. One, who's going to play center field? And two, is this bullpen good enough if the starting rotation can only go 5 or 6 innings most days? And I think the answer to that question was no. The addition of Kelly brings them one piece closer to having that. And if they were to put Mora in the pen with Kelly, suddenly you have Benoit, you have Quackenbush, you have Kelly, you have Mora. Dale Thayer is not your 7th or 8th inning guy anymore. He becomes a less important piece, but he's at least a useful option getting to pitch half his games in that park.
Yeah, I think it was a good move, no doubt. And obviously the Yankees realized that they needed help in the pen, and it wasn't Sean Kelly they wanted there next year, so they went out and made a bigger deal. And I like the deal for both clubs. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, the trade the Yankees made after the swap with the Padres, they dealt Manny Banuelos, a longtime top pitching prospect in their organization, to Atlanta, and they got back David Carpenter, and I believe it's Chazen Shreve is the pronunciation. Those two guys both bringing live arms, Carpenter having some experience. I think Carpenter is an upgrade over Sean Kelly.
I do too.
But here's the question. Did they give up too much to get it? I mean, Banuelos hasn't been knocked around and healthy and stalled out in the minor leagues. He's been hurt. So there's a lot of risk there, but there's still a lot of upside.
Well, two things on Banuelos. Number one, he had Tommy John surgery a year and a half ago, I think. And he's just coming back. The thing about him, he's got a great arm. There is no doubt. And he's left-handed. The other thing is that he's been wild. If you look at his walk rate, that has never been stable. And if you're going to pitch out of the pen, you've got to throw strikes. But the risk-reward is tremendous. This is a guy with such a good arm, even post-Tommy John, that if he straightens out that command, they're going to have a starter or a reliever anywhere from, you know, a 3-starter anywhere into the pen. That's the type of upside this guy still has. And I remind us that lefties tend to find their command late, even Sandy Koufax. Clayton Kershaw was late, you know, not as late as Banuelos, but we think when you look at pitchers, if you've got that kind of arm with good scouting and if you're a good pupil, you can rein that in. Great risk-reward deal, and the reward could be terrific.
It seems like the way the Braves are rebuilding right now on the fly is that they're taking chances on very high upside players that have some red flags in the medical chart. I mean, Max Fried, who they got as the key piece in the Justin Upton deal, has frontline potential if he gets back from his Tommy John surgery. And, you know, if they hit on these guys, it's a huge windfall, a way to kind of rebuild the lack of young talent that they have in the organization. If they miss, it could set them back a few years. But at the same time, they still have that nucleus that's good enough where I look at the Braves and think they're probably a little better than a 500 team right now, but I look at the Marlins, I look at the Nationals, and I see those two teams as being clearly better as they're constructed right here on January 2nd.
Yeah, you know what this deal said to me? I went a little bit deeper in my mind, and I'm saying, what, you know, why did you pass on Chris Medlin? Why, you know who Chris Medlin is. He had the surgery. He's been hurt. Same issue as some of these guys that you're picking up. What is it about Medlin that the Braves didn't like that they like with Banuelos and Fried? So it kind of raised that issue for me. But boy, I'll tell you, Fried and Banuelos together, if they are healthy and get that command straightened out, wow, that's a terrific two. Those are terrific two upside pitchers.
All right, Bernie, let's start diving into the AL report cards here. This is the offseason so far. Some teams are done, some teams are not. We'll start with the Angels. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, I believe, as they are properly known. Hopefully they'll one day just be the California Angels again. I think that name best suits them. But let's take a look here at what they've done. Howie Kendrick is gone. Josh Rutledge has been brought in to take over as the second baseman, but Grant Green maybe could push his way into the lineup. So second base might still be an area of need. Matt Joyce has been brought in, could tandem DH with CJ Krohn. Andrew Heaney was their big get as part of that Howie Kendrick trade. What do you make of what the Angels have done to this point in the offseason?
I do not like losing Howie Kendrick, even though he's close to having his own way and free agency. I still think Howie Kendrick makes that lineup work much better, hitting him with Trout and Pujols and Hamilton. Howie Kendrick drives in runs. That's a big loss. And you're not going to replace him with Josh Rutledge. Rutledge does not have the same bat. And by the way, I think Kendrick was a pretty good infielder, never got credit for it. Bringing in Andrew Heaney is a win. As a left-hander out of the rotation, start him as a five, move him up. This is a guy with tremendous upside. Heaney can really pitch, so that's a real plus. But you've traded an everyday guy for a terrific upside guy, and you won a tremendous number of games last year, but you were kind of weak in your starting rotation. So overall, I think I would have made the deal. I hate to give up Kendrick, but Heaney will be there for years to come. He's under control. He's left-handed. He can pitch with Santiago. He can pitch with C.J. Wilson, you know, and Jared Weaver in the rotation. I like that part of it.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think overall I'd give their offseason maybe like a B or possibly a B-, only because I don't think they're done. So that's why I tend to be a little bit more harsh on them. I like Heaney, I think, more than most people do. I thought that was going to be a good get for the Dodgers, and I was surprised the Dodgers flipped him right away. But given their need at second base after moving D. Gordon, it made some sense. I look at this team, and I'm not as crazy about Cole Calhoun as most people are. Second base is a hole. Third base with David Freese is a problem spot for me, too. I don't really like that they brought in Matt Joyce to handle that DH spot with Krohn. I think they should just let Krohn have that everyday spot and let him play a little bit of first base. But, I mean, Joyce and Krohn could platoon and be more effective because you have a lefty and a righty there now. So maybe that's their plan. Maybe it's an insurance policy in right field if Calhoun flops too, having Joyce there. I think it's a B-, though, for me. And, again, I don't think they're necessarily done dealing, but they also weren't positioned financially to go out and add more to the payroll. They've got a lot of long-term commitments already.
The thing that we have to remember is that Garrett Richards is, you know, a terrific pitcher, and he adds the right-handed balance when he's back. Then they've got Tyler Skaggs, another left-handed pitcher. So you've got seven quality starting pitchers, not four, not three, but seven that would start literally in any rotation with Heaney, Santiago, Shoemaker, Wilson, Weaver, Richards, and Skaggs. That's an enviable position to be in because you need seven or eight starters. But generally, there's a big drop-off. There isn't with the Angels. So I like that. I don't like the Matt Joyce part of it at all, but I would like to see Krohn hit every day.
Let's talk about the Oakland A's. They've made a ton of moves, big-time sellers to this point in the offseason. And to recap, they've traded away Brandon Moss. They've traded away Jeff Samardzija. They have traded away Derek Norris. I mean, it's been a lot. They traded away Josh Donaldson in a blockbuster trade before that. Now, they get a lot of pieces back in return. Franklin Barreto, of course, Brett Laurie, Chris Bassett, Josh Fegley, Marcus Semien, whole cast of players have come back. Jesse Hahn was the big get in that Derek Norris trade. When you look at the totality of the moves made by Oakland at this point, Bernie, and knowing that maybe they were being realistic about what they were facing long term with a lot of those players, do you like the moves they've made this offseason?
This is an incomplete. You cannot judge these moves until 3 years from now. Once we see who Franklin Barreto becomes, Then we'll have a better picture of what Oakland did. But for now, if it were this year, this is a D. Clearly, they gave up all of their hitting. I don't see how they're going to score runs, but that's a problem for another day. In terms of what they got back, I like some of it. I like Joe Wendell at second base. I think he could break into the lineup later this year. He could be their permanent second baseman. That's why this is an incomplete. You could see Wendell and Brito as the middle infield 3 years from now and rave about it if they don't trade those guys. And that's why I can't put a grade on this. But when you give up a Josh Donaldson and guys like that, and you lose the depth that they lost, it's scary.
I think I'm with you in that if I had to give it a grade based on this year, it's a C, but it's a C projectable to like a B+, because they took a chance on a lot of different guys that have talent. And if they're able to max out the talent of those players, suddenly these moves don't look that bad. If Brett Laurie becomes the player we thought he might be 2 or 3 years ago, that could be a huge addition. If Ike Davis can somehow be another version of Brandon Moss, a guy who in his late 20s really starts to figure it out and becomes just a masher on the big side of a platoon, suddenly first base doesn't look that bad. If Billy Butler hits more like he did before 2014, suddenly they have another bat there. So there's a lot of little pieces there that could come together. They get guys like Jared Parker and AJ Griffin back from injury at some point. I think that helps them a lot too. I know those aren't off-season moves, but
Those are a lot of ifs, DVR.
I think what they did, though, they spread the risk around, right? Like they took volume. They traded away some sure things and took back multiple players in trades. And when historically, when they've done that, it's usually worked out very well for them. So as easy as it is to be worried about them right now, if you're an A's fan, I think you just have to trust what that front office has been able to do in this situation before. But I'm with you. I think it's a C for right now. A lot of ifs. Could be a B just based on the moves, depending on some of the long-term things here, and maybe a little more if they really hit on all the prospects. But
well, one thing that concerns me about them, lots of strikeouts in that lineup. Josh Reddick, Ike Davis, Brett Laurie, and Billy Butler hitting together, not in that order. I think there's some high strikeout volume there. And if I'm a fantasy player, which I am, I'm a little bit concerned and I'm shying away from Oakland because I don't see who's going to drive in the runs and I see a lot of strikeouts with men on base. It kind of scares me from a fantasy standpoint. I don't know about Marcus Semien in the infield. I've seen potential. It's kind of iffy for me. There isn't much there. That's what I'm saying.
I look at it and I see sources of potential value. I think Butler coming off a relatively down year, fantasy-wise, could be somewhat undervalued. I could see him having a year where he hits close to like 290, maybe a dozen, 15 home runs, and 85 or 90 runs driven in. I think he's the kind of guy that picks up some of that slack. And, you know, ultimately losing Donaldson's huge on an individual level, but they might have a handful of guys that help make up for that production. A little more balance throughout the lineup as opposed to leaning on three or four guys for a lot of that run production. Let's talk about the Astros. Been a pretty quiet offseason for them. They brought back Jed Lowrie. They signed Pat Neshek and Luke Gregerson. So an improved bullpen. Solution at short until Carlos Correa is ready. I didn't expect the Astros to go out and spend a lot of money. I think this is pretty much a C, C-minus type offseason because they didn't get significantly better, but I didn't expect them to.
I give it about a C-minus myself. I don't think they are a better club. I think their bullpen is better. I don't know, you know, what you're getting out of Chad Quall, 6 years old, as your closer. I think Gregerson is going to end up closing there. You pick up 6 years of age, not as much experience. Pat Neshek is a very nice addition as a setup man. But in terms of their lineup, Robbie Grossman's still your left fielder. Yes, he's got speed and nice on-base percentage, but doesn't bring much pop. Switch hitter, though. I still love Altuve. Dexter Fowler is, you know, another iffy guy, feast or famine. Chris Carter, a lot of strikeouts there. George Springer is the real deal. But then, who is Jason Castro? Is he a good hitter? Is he an average hitter? Will they move him? You know, now they have Conger and Corcoran on the bench, two catchers out of four bench players. That's kind of scary. And to me, it says that Castro's on the move, very possibly. I don't know who John Singleton is yet. A lot of strikeouts in his game. Matt Dominguez, same thing at third base. It's a weak lineup, DVR. It really is.
I think their build all along, though, has been waiting on the farm system. So that I mean, I don't want to bury them for this offseason because, again, I don't think that I'd be more upset as an Astros fan if they had gone out and spent a lot of money in free agency. The moves they've made will make their team a little bit better this year, and by the end of those reliever contracts, they might be competitive if their young talent is ready for the big leagues over the course of those contracts. Let's talk about the Mariners. They've been pretty active here this offseason. We talked about Ruggiano and Smith being a platoon now in the outfield. That's pretty good upgrade. I don't think they're going to go out and find one guy to take that spot from Dustin Ackley and left. So it's probably Ackley, Austin Jackson, and the Smith-Ruggiano platoon to begin the year. They got Jay Happ in that deal for Michael Saunders with the Blue Jays. Not a ton of moves, but a lot of little tweaks that seem to have made this team better. What do you think of what they've done so far?
I give it an A. I'll tell you, this is the team, if you remember, I started talking about 2 years ago, that I love the future of the Mariners. Well, now I love it even more. You look at that lineup, and I don't see an automatic out there. I don't see a guy that you're going to breathe easy and say, hey, you know what, I want to face Brad Miller in the 9-hole or Dustin Ackley in the 8-hole. You know what? This is a very balanced lefty-righty lineup with power. The pitching is sharp. With J.A. Happ as your 5. I like him a lot. I like Rodney as the closer. This is a very balanced club, and I think that deal that brought Smith to them puts them over the top as the favorite in the American League West. I really love what they have done.
Obviously, the addition of Nelson Cruz, the big move the Mariners made.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I'll give them a B. And the only reason I'm giving him a B is because long-term, I'm not crazy about that contract for Cruz, but for this year, it makes him a lot better. If you're looking at 1 year, I think the A is a fair grade. I think if you're grading the moves based on what they get in the long run from these players, probably looking at closer to a B, but one of the better off seasons we've seen so far just based on filling areas of need. And I'm very curious to see if the Mariners have another move or two coming as we move through January and February.
Hey, Derek, I'm actually considering keeping Cano at $41 because of Cruz. I think it makes Cano a better and even more lethal hitter. And he didn't have that last year, but now he's got Cruz behind him. I think he could be a $40 player. What do you think?
That's about $3 a home run, though, for Robbie Cano.
Yeah,
and that's,
yeah, it is.
How many home runs are you expecting to get from Cano? I think that ultimately determines whether or not he's worth that much in an AL-only league with inflation. Again, this is the league we're talking about, is grass ball. I mean, if you're in a league that deep where inflation's pretty bad, you do have to think about it because the stability of a player like Cano is worth having. But the power dropped off in a big way last year. How many home runs are you projecting for Robbie Cano in 2015?
I haven't done my numbers yet, but certainly not many more than he hit this year. The thing about him is the on-base percentage. That's what I'm buying. Because in a league like that, where on-base percentage counts, he's a winner. And he'll drive in runs. That's what I like about having Cruz behind him. They've got to pitch to Cano. They've got to pitch to Cruz because Sager's behind him. So I like that.
Let's talk about the Rangers. We'll close the book on the AL West here. And you look at the moves they have made this offseason. They've been pretty quiet. They went ahead and signed Kuji Fujikawa. I like that addition to their bullpen. They acquired Ross Detweiler in a trade with the Nationals. But otherwise, it's been a pretty quiet winter in Texas. And I think a big part of that is that they went ahead last offseason and really made some big moves. They acquired Prince Fielder. They signed Shin-Soo Chu. Injuries completely destroyed their team last year to the point where going out and spending a bunch more money this year probably wasn't the answer. But I still think they have some holes. They lack rotation depth. I think that's the big concern. If you look at their rotation right now, Bernie, it's Darvish, it's Derek Holland, and then what? Who do you really trust behind those two guys to take the ball on those other 3 days?
The other guys are Colby Lewis and Ross Detweiler and Nick Teppish. And you have to ask yourself, why aren't they in on Shields and why aren't they in on Scherzer? One of those two guys changes the entire complexion of the Rangers. They cannot afford another injury. What if Darvish goes down? You know, they are not deep in starting pitching. Matt Harrison was hurt. Martin Perez was hurt. They've got to count on these guys coming back, and I don't know that they all will. This is a team that really baffles me, because I think the resources are there, but I'm waiting. Something's going to happen with this club. This is not like John Daniels to sit back and watch everybody grab the headlines, especially one of his proteges in Preller. So I look for the Rangers to get it going here by the end of spring training. And who is Prince Fielder? Do we know anymore who this guy is? I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see Fielder in spring training. If you said make a list of five guys you definitely want to watch at some point in February and March, Prince Fielder's on that list just because of the health issues. I think Ryan Braun probably makes that list, and maybe we'll have that as we get closer to spring training. We'll list the guys that we're most curious to see from a health standpoint, or maybe
we'll do that.
From a list of guys that maybe we just haven't seen before, too. But I'm giving the Rangers a D right now. They just haven't done – they don't have to do a lot to change that grade, but I thought they would have done something by now. And maybe you're right. Maybe Scherzer or Shields ends up being that move. If they do that, they go from a D.
We haven't heard that. We haven't heard that at all.
They're not linked to him.
You know, with Boris, it takes a long time. But I thought the Rangers would go after at least one of those two guys. And the thing about them is that the injuries – you know, you can overcome some injuries. It depleted this club. It tore them apart. You know, what if Profar can't come back? There's a lot of ifs.
I think for me, Profar is almost irrelevant in terms of whether or not he's healthy. He's useful if he gets healthy because he might be a trade piece, or he allows them to trade somebody like Odor. I think it's Fielder and Chu. Those are the main guys. And Darvish, obviously. If those three guys stay healthy... This is a team that suddenly becomes a wild card contender, even if they don't do anything. Even if they sit tight how they are and they get healthy seasons from those players, they go from team that couldn't win more than, 70 games last year to an AL wild card contender, and that's doing nothing. So they didn't have to do a lot, and that's why I think one big signing would jump them from like a D to a B plus or an A minus. But right now, they've been so inactive, I got to give them the D.
I'm with you. The thing about Profar, and you know, I remember back on my comments about him, I thought he was a good player. I thought he was way overrated. But now that he's hurt, his trade value has declined. So that's a lose-lose. He didn't perform like you thought he would, and now he might be untradeable. So that one, you know, that didn't work out for the Rangers so far. But he's so young, he could still have a great career.
I get the feeling that if I taught a class, my students wouldn't like the way I grade. I've not given out an A yet. The highest grade I gave out in the AL West was a B to the Mariners. I think you gave them
I gave them an A, yeah.
You gave out an A there. I'm going to give out my first A with the White Sox. I think the White Sox have had a fantastic offseason. The AL Central is one of those divisions with the Tigers scuffling year in and year out in a division that I thought they should have run away with the last couple of years. The White Sox see that window. They saw what the Royals did, and they've been very aggressive this offseason. You add David Robertson, you add Zach Duke, two really big pieces for the bullpen. You make the trade for Jeff Samardzija. That's huge. You get that 1-2 punch now with Chris Sale. I think Jose Quintana's legit as a 3. Avisel Garcia being healthy is a big addition that they didn't really have for most of last year because of that shoulder injury. They signed Melky Cabrera. They signed Adam LaRoche. This is a team that does not have many holes. The bottom third of the lineup might be a little bit weak, but I'm okay with it. I think they can find a guy, whether that's Carlos Sanchez or somebody else in the organization to play second base. I think Flowers and Brantley are adequate behind the plate. They're not great, but they're good enough when you think about the home runs the middle of this lineup can produce.
This is my second A, no doubt about it. I really love what the White Sox have done. I give them kudos for going out and trying to fix some problems. The big get was David Robertson to close. I think that's a super move. I think they were shaky in the bullpen. He adds length and depth, and he is your closer. There's no doubt who closes. It's David Robertson. You know, you added Melky in your two-hole. ahead of Abreu and LaRoche. This is a dangerous, dangerous club. And everybody from Kansas City, Detroit, Cleveland, Minnesota, beware. You got to go in there and beat this team because they can run, they can hit, and they can hit with power. They have three good starting pitchers and a closer. That's a pretty good balance on a ball club.
I think as it stands right now, if I'm looking at the entire American League, I would expect the White Sox to make the playoffs. I don't know if I think they're the best team in the Central, but I think you might see two teams from the Central get in. You might see that wild card and the division winner yet again go to the playoffs here from the AL Central. Let's talk about the Royals. One game away from winning the World Series. They're off season to this point. They lost Billy Butler to the A's in free agency, very early in free agency, in fact. The moves they've added Kendrys Morales. They've added Chris Medlin on a two-year deal. They brought back Luke Hochaver. They signed Alex Rios to a one-year deal. I like the moves they've made because they haven't overcommitted to anybody. I think the big question here, what are they going to do in the rotation? They've signed Edinson Volquez to help try and stabilize the depth there. I don't think they can afford to re-sign James Shields, but I think this is a team that's just not quite as good as it was in October.
And that's funny because I said this on XM the other day with Jeff and Thorne. I feel this club right now is better than the club that lost the World Series. And I say that because I think the additions of Alex Rios and Kendrys Morales definitely trump the loss of Billy Butler. The big issue for me is Alex Gordon's wrist. If he has any problem hitting, because wrists are crucial in the swing, then I think they have trouble. But I like the rotation. Yordano Ventura is your ace. You've got Vargas and Guthrie and Volquez and Duffy. I like this club. I like the way they're built. I love their closer and Greg Holland. I think it's a better club than lost the World Series. And I know that's going out on a limb. I think they're going to score more runs.
I like the Rio signing at 1 year, especially, and I think Morales was a pretty good bargain for them. There probably isn't much of a difference. With him going through a regular spring training, I expect to see that more typical level of production from Kendrys Morales this year. Alex Rios had like seven injuries he played through last season. I think I'm going to have him in a lot of places in fantasy. I know that he's been in hitter-friendly parks his whole career. I mean, Rogers Center, U.S. Cellular Field, and Arlington. So the power numbers may not come back much in Kansas City. He might be an 8-10 home run guy. But Ned Yost likes to run so much. Exactly. I feel pretty good about Alex Rios as a guy that might hit 10 home runs and should pretty easily make a run at 30 stolen bases again.
Look, I agree with that. And I think you're going to see a better Eric Hosmer for the entire season, not just in spurts. I think Lorenzo Cain is a star, as I kept saying last year. This is a good, balanced ball club. And what if Sal Perez becomes Sal Perez that I used to love and not the Sal Perez who swung at everything and pulled everything down the left field line? If he returns to who I think he could be, this is a very, very tough ball club.
They're getting the B from me mostly because of the rotation. I think the rotation's a problem. I don't know if Chris Medlin's even going to be ready for opening day. I think that's part of the reason why he signed that two-year deal. I think there's this idea that since he's coming off his second Tommy John, it might take him a little bit longer to get ready. Behind Ventura and Duffy, it's Volquez, it's Vargas, it's Guthrie. Those guys just don't scare me. And maybe they stay healthy and they're above replacement level. But again, I think in a short series, not having James Shields or a guy of that caliber really hurts them. I'm curious to see if Finnegan actually stretches out and has a chance to win a rotation spot because I think that would give them a huge boost come April. But I don't know what their plans are for him, at least in the short term. Let's talk about the Tigers, Bernie. The big trade they made was trading Rick Porcello to get Yoenis Cespedes. They also made a deal trading second base prospect Devin Travis to get Anthony Gose. I think the way the outfield lines up, it's Cespedes, Gose, and J.D. Martinez with Rajay Davis working more as that fourth outfielder, but Gose is no sure thing to be an everyday player. We might see a lot of Rajay Davis again this year. I think one thing they're going to get is likely a healthier version of Miguel Cabrera. Even if he misses time at the beginning of the year, which is a possibility, it's going to be really hard to know how much time he misses until spring training gets here. Even if that happens, I think he's healthier when he plays in 2015 than he was, especially in the second half of 2014.
I think they have to sign Scherzer. I think that would be a loss that they cannot overcome against the White Sox and the Royals and the Indians. I think Scherzer, out of that rotation, makes them, you know, play with the other guys instead of being a cut above. Scherzer and Price together with Verlander and Sanchez, that's amazing. But now you put Simone into the rotation. You've got Shane Green in the rotation. You lost Porcello and possibly Scherzer. I don't know that you can overcome that, to tell you the truth. Verlander is not the Verlander of old. I still think Scherzer's going back to Detroit. At one time I said it was the Yankees, but now I'm switching that tune. I think he's going to Detroit. I think Mr. Ilitch and the Boris group have a good relationship. They're going to come to a meeting of the minds. Detroit's going to realize it's too big of a loss. Scherzer loves Detroit. I think he's going back. If that happens, then their offseason is a B. Right now, it's a C-.
I'm going B- on it right now. I think I like the Shane Green acquisition more than most, and Cespedes too. I think Cespedes in that lineup, especially on the cusp of free agency, gives them yet another big power threat. They brought back Victor Martinez too, so they committed to make the big move by getting him back in the fold. We talked briefly about JD Martinez during the winter meetings. I'm buying into what he did last year in terms of becoming a more balanced hitter. He's hitting for power to all fields. That's something he didn't do earlier in his career. I'm with you. They have to add a starting pitcher. I don't think it's Scherzer, though. I think that ship sailed. When he turned down that extension offer from them previously, I think that was it. I think that was a sign that he's definitely leaving. Originally, I said if Lester goes to Chicago, Scherzer goes to Boston. I'm sticking with that. I think Scherzer goes to Boston, but I think James Shields goes to Detroit. And I think that gives them just as much stability in terms of fortifying the front part of the rotation. I'd rather have Scherzer than Shields, but the cost on Shields will be lower. And I think given how much they had to give Victor Martinez to keep him in tow, I think Shields is more in the Tigers' price range.
You could be right, but let me talk about Cespedes for a second, because this is an interesting phenomenon. In that lineup, you're going to go probably, and I'm not writing out the lineup, Kinsler goes Cabrera. Cabrera's your three. Do we agree on that?
Should be.
Okay, Martinez is your four, and that's Victor. Probably JD as your five. Then you've got Cespedes. But after Cespedes is Avila. So I don't know if Cespedes is going to see any pitches. And if it isn't Cespedes, let's say it's JD Martinez, then he's not going to see any pitches. I think the bottom third of that lineup with Avila, Castellanos, and Iglesias is going to hurt the Cespedes or Martinez in the whole of 5 and 6. It's a little bit murky for me when you've got a Cespedes as your six.
I'm okay with Cespedes hitting six. I think Nick Castellanos actually is going to have another step forward this year. I think that actually helps the bottom third of the lineup a lot. He's one of those guys that doesn't strike out a ton. That's going to help. At least I don't expect him to strike out very much. That's ultimately going to make that bottom third a lot stronger. My concern with them also, aside from fortifying the rotation a bit more, because I don't want to rely on Alfredo Simone. I think he's better as a swingman, a guy that you could put in the bullpen if you need to bring him into the rotation during the year. That's fine. He's okay in that role, but I don't want him as my four or my five going into the year if I expect to win a division title. The bullpen's a major area of concern. I do think they get a better year out of Soria. It wouldn't surprise me if Soria takes away the closer role from Joe Nathan.
He's healthy.
But the depth in the bullpen is a concern. I think they need to add bullpen arms. They still need to add one more big starting pitcher, and that would really go a long way. I think Anibal Sanchez, if healthy, one of the more underrated starters in the game. And I don't think the Tigers are done. I think they look at this and they say, our window's open right now. We've got to go ahead and push all the chips in because they're almost there. I mean, they're 80% of the way there in terms of the offseason moves. Just that one more big move and a couple of bullpen pieces that really put them over the top and make their offseason almost as good as the White Sox. We'll see what they're able to do. Let's talk about Cleveland now, Bernie. The Gavin Floyd signing was kind of a surprise. They made that trade to get Brandon Moss from Oakland. That could be a big addition to the corners. The corners are a little bit crowded right now. What do you make of what Cleveland's done to this point in the offseason?
Well, I didn't like the Floyd deal initially because of what it did to Salazar and House. But the more I think about it, the more I want that veteran in the rotation. Because even Corey Kluber is not, you know, doesn't have the veteran status yet. But you've got Kluber and Carrasco, Bauer, Floyd, and maybe Salazar or House. I want it to be House because he's left-handed. That's a terrific on-paper rotation. They still have to get it done, but that's pretty tough. You know, five guys that you face in any series, you're going to see three or four of those guys. That's pretty tough. The lineup still bothers me. Jason Kipnis bothers me. I'm not nuts about the Brandon Moss deal. I get it. I think he's a platoon player at best. He does hit righties, but, you know, a hip surgery, that's pretty iffy. Hips and wrists, that's where it's all at. So my jury is out. I give him a C. I think they could have done a lot more. They're just, you know, they're there, but they're not over the top yet.
Yeah, we're in lockstep on the grade here. I mean, I think they didn't give up a lot to get Brandon Moss, but at the same time, I don't think that was an area of need. First base and the corner outfield spots were pretty full. If they had found a way to move Nick Swisher and then acquire Moss, maybe you feel a little better about it. But even then, Moss has to rotate between DH and maybe play a little bit of outfield, which he did last year with Oakland. Maybe it's a good buy low. Doesn't fit very well. I didn't like the Gavin Floyd signing either. I think they had enough starting pitching to compete for those back end spots. So unless you're going to get a more impactful guy, I don't see why you go ahead and make that commitment to a guy like Floyd. And it's not a big contract, but it's still just a piece you really didn't need. So I'm giving the Indians a C at this point, maybe even a C minus if I looked at it even more closely. Let's talk about the Twins here as we wrap up the AL Central and what they've been able to do to this point. Not a very active club, but they did add Irvin Santana to the mix. Santana finally getting that multi-year deal. They bring back Torrey Hunter, so all of the Twins fans with Torrey Hunter jerseys can feel pretty good about that purchase from a few years back, sort of returning some extra value in the twilight of his career. Otherwise, they haven't done a lot, and I didn't expect them to because they're another team, much like the Astros, where they have a lot of young talent coming up to their system. And as those players get to the big leagues, they'll begin to make more long-term commitments to free agents. So what do you make of what the Twins were able to do this offseason, which also includes extending Phil Hughes for three more years?
Clearly not enough. They're a D for me. This is a team that had a very, very difficult time putting five starting pitchers on the mound that had any chance to win day in and day out. I think signing Santana was nice, but they needed more. They needed more pitching. They needed deeper pitching. They needed another outfielder. I don't think Aaron Hicks is going to hit big league pitching. He's their starting center fielder. For me, Pinto is a better catcher right now, hitting-wise, than Kurt Suzuki, but Suzuki is a terrific defender. So I don't know where you go if you're the Twins. You've got to find some pitching somewhere. But the strength of their minor league system is Sano at third base, Buxton in center field, and not that much pitching. So I think unless they're going to get some prospects in a deal soon, Trevor May isn't the answer for me. Alex Meyer isn't the answer for me. I think it's a D.
I'm going to give them a C only because it's a small market team, and it's easy to screw up when you sign the wrong guys. I don't think Irvin Santana was a bad signing for them. Ultimately, they didn't get a lot better, but they also didn't get worse by hurting themselves in the long run. Let's talk about the AL East. We'll start in Boston. This is a team that I expect to still make a few more moves. They acquired Wade Miley from Arizona in a big trade, giving up Ruby De La Rosa and Alan Webster as part of that trade. They went ahead and traded for Rick Porcello, giving up Yoenis Cespedes in that deal. They brought back Justin Masterson as a free agent. They traded Will Middlebrooks to get Ryan Hannigan to kind of stabilize the defense behind the plate. Hannigan's a good OBP guy, but beyond that, they don't need offense from their catcher spot. He's a good tandem guy to work with their youngster, Christian Vasquez. What do you make of the Red Sox? Think about the free agent signings they've made. Pablo Sandoval coming in, Hanley Ramirez coming in, presumably to be their left fielder. That's how he was introduced. Do you feel like the Red Sox have done enough this offseason to earn an A?
No, I don't. I think Sandoval and Ramirez were great moves for them in their park. My jury is still out on Ruisne Castillo. I don't know if he's a big league player yet. So I still think they have some question marks. My issue is this. They're gonna slug their way to some victories, but I really have to doubt that rotation. You know, Porcello is now your ace. Until you can bring home a Shields or a Scherzer, you've got Rick Porcello as your ace. Now, I think the guy's gonna get better and better. He's still only 26. He's a terrific. He's got a terrific arsenal if he can command it. But then you're into Wade Miley and Justin Masterson. And I think they're mediocre at best. Masterson has to overcome the oblique, has to be able to get left-handers out. Miley has to keep the ball on the ground and hasn't been able to do it. Clay Buchholz has been very shaky. And Joe Kelly is probably better than all of them, and he might be the five. So I think their pitching is still way too weak. They're going to clobber you to death and win games 6-4, 7-5. Something like that.
I think I'm giving them a B-plus right now, and they're only getting a B-plus because the roster just doesn't make sense. They made great moves. I mean, I like the fact that they got Sandoval, and I think the contract for Ramirez was less than I expected, so I'm actually pretty happy if I'm a Red Sox fan that it's only a four-year deal for Hanley given his injury history. I mean, Sandoval's obviously a huge get. I think it's a B-plus with the potential to quickly become an A. If they get Max Scherzer, suddenly the rotation looks a lot better because you have a bunch of guys who are threes and fours behind a true frontline starter, and I think they've got some young pitching coming through their system that's not that far away from contributing. But if you're spending as much money as Boston has spent, that leaves you in a spot where you really don't have much room for error, and I think with the current rotation, it'd be impossible to give them better than a B-plus. That's the grade that I'm giving them for what they've done to this point.
I just want to say one thing about Scherzer in Boston, and this is the concern I have. If he hangs a breaking ball in Boston, it's gone. It's either up against the wall or it's out of the park. If he hangs a breaking ball in Detroit, it's not that big of a deal. He's got a bigger park to play in. Same thing in New York. If he hangs a breaking ball against a left-handed hitter, forget about it. That's why I still lean now, after I've analyzed all of this, that he goes back to Detroit. Enough said about Scherzer.
Let's move on to the Yankees. Didi Gregorius acquired from the Diamondbacks as part of a three-team swap. Shane Green is gone. They signed Andrew Miller during the winter meetings. Big addition to the bullpen there with Dellin Betances and Miller locking down the eighth and ninth inning in some order. They re-signed Chase Headley to a long-term deal, pretty affordable long-term deal, in my opinion. They traded for Nate Eovaldi and Garrett Jones in a swap that sent Martin Prado and David Phelps to Miami. And they also traded away Sean Kelly, as we mentioned. They made the deal we talked about earlier with the Braves giving up Manny Banuelos to get Chaz and Shreve and David Carpenter. If you look at the collection of moves made here by the Yankees, how do you feel about what Brian Cashman has done this offseason?
I think his moves have been brilliant, to tell you the truth. I love Garrett Jones in Yankee Stadium against right-handed pitching. I said that 2 weeks ago, and I think he's going to get a tremendous number of at-bats facing right-handed pitching, and I think A-Rod's the one that's going to, you know, lose out. He'll be the DH against lefties. I do love Didi at shortstop, no doubt about it. He will platoon with Brendan Ryan, but he'll never get better hitting lefties in a platoon, but that's the way it's going to be. I do predict that he will be in that in a platoon situation. But the pitching, what they have done, they've added Eovaldi at the end of the rotation, which is good. But the bullpen after yesterday is much better with David Carpenter in it. I like it. And I've seen Shreve, and I like what he can bring as a lefty out of the bullpen. I think both those guys go into the pen. They had a question mark with Banuelos. These guys are for real that they got for him. And I like what the Yankees have done. This is a B. I don't think they're done yet. I think they're going to go get another position player and even another pitcher before it's all over. But they will. They need a second baseman. As far as I'm concerned, you're not the Yankees playing a rookie at second base.
Yeah, Jose Perella and Rob Refsnyder are the guys currently lined up to compete for that job. They get a second baseman, they jump up to an A, I think, right now, much like the Red Sox. They're probably sitting with a solid B+. It's been a good offseason so far, and I actually think they're okay if they don't make that long-term commitment to Max Scherzer and if they don't make that commitment to James Shields. Obviously, it helps what makes them better, but as currently constructed, I feel better about the starters the Yankees currently have than I do about what the Red Sox have, and those are both subject to change, of course, based on moves. But Tanaka, Pineda, Eovaldi, Sabathia, I mean, if Capuano's your five until Ivan Nova gets back, I don't think that's that bad.
Let me ask you this, DVR. Do you think that Stephen Drew definitely wants to play shortstop? Because I think if he wanted to play second base, he'd be in a Yankee uniform tomorrow.
I don't know what Stephen Drew thinks. You know, he's just kind of one of those players that maybe it's because of his brother that he gets that reputation for maybe being aloof, even though he's not. I think he's going to get to the point where he realizes his best offer might come to play second base for a team like the Yankees or a team like the White Sox. There's a lot of teams out there that need second baseman, and really not that, there aren't that many that need shortstop, surprisingly.
See, and that's what I think is holding him back. I think he wants to be a shortstop. I get that. But there's jobs out there at second base. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but Drew fits really nicely there at second base.
Yeah, he definitely does. He'd be a good short-term solution where they let those younger players develop. But if you look around the league, teams in need of a shortstop, it's a short list. I mean, a lot of teams have younger options who they can lock in.
The Mets. Cheaply. The Mets come to mind.
The Mets are one where if they don't make a deal for Tulowitzki, that's where he could end up. But do the Mets really want to give Stephen Drew more than a 1 or maybe a 2-year deal?
At $10 million a year? I don't think so.
I just think it's a short list. The Phillies, they're not really positioning themselves to compete this year. They have a needed shortstop, but why would they sign him? It just doesn't make any sense for them. I mean, you've already got the Pirates have Kang plus Jordy Mercer. They wouldn't be interested. The Padres are the other team that still look like a fit for Stephen Drew if he wants to be a shortstop. I think that was when we talked about maybe a week or 2 weeks ago. I could see him landing there and getting a chance to play shortstop every day.
Possibly. Yeah, you know, they've got to be running out of money pretty soon. And $10 million a year is what he turned down with Oakland.
But now that Asdrubal Cabrera is off the board, having signed with the Rays, which we'll talk about the Rays next, that probably puts Stephen Drew as that next middle infielder up in terms of free agent signings. Let's take a look at what the Rays have done so far, Bernie. They make a big trade, getting rid of Will Myers. Rene Rivera is going to be their new catcher. This is their primary catcher. They add Asdrubal Cabrera.
Definitely an upgrade. Definitely an upgrade.
I think that's a pretty solid addition behind the plate. You look at what they've done in the outfield. Steven Souza coming in from Washington as part of that three-team deal. That could be a huge addition. Maybe just as good as Will Myers. I mean, that's the potential that I think Souza brings to the table. The rotation is still solid. No big changes there. Eventually, they get Matt Moore back. In the bullpen, they add Kevin Jepsen. This is a team that really got younger. They tried to replenish that farm system with the Asdrubal Cabrera addition, Rivera behind the plate, and now Souza in right field, and Will Myers gone, Matt Joyce also gone. What do you make of what the Rays did?
Well, you know, they're the new Rays. This is a regime that we hadn't seen before. I don't like the addition of Cabrera as your second baseman, although he's okay, but I don't think that was your biggest need. Unless you know that Zobrist is gone. And if you're going to get younger and younger, Zobrist can do it for you. He can fetch you 2 or 3 very good, almost major league ready players. I like their rotation. I don't like their bullpen as well. I like Jepsen. I told you a couple weeks ago I thought he would close. I still think that he and Boxberger are going to fight that out, in my opinion. The guy I like is Alex Colomé. I always have. I think it's his chance to be in the rotation. I think he'll be their 5. I'd give them probably a C. They're trying to shake up the club, and they've done it in several ways. What about you? What grade? If they're not done yet, Zobrist probably will go.
Yeah, I'm looking at maybe like a B minus, C plus. And again, when we're grading what teams do in the offseason, I think you do it within the lens of what the organization is trying to accomplish, the resources they have. I mean, the Rays aren't going to go out and sign big free agents. We've learned that over the past decade. But the trade that I like the most, looking back at all the moves they've made, is one that helps them in the long term more than anything else. The Jeremy Hellickson trade with the Diamondbacks, where they got Justin Williams and Andrew Velasquez back, that's the kind of trade we're going to look back at in 2 or 3 years, and we're going to say, wow, the Rays made a fantastic deal moving Jeremy Hellickson at a time where they really didn't have an overwhelming need to keep him.
Can't disagree with you there. You're absolutely right. That's the one you evaluate 3 years from now, and it's going to tip, I think, in the Rays' direction very easily.
And the more I've heard Jason Collette talk about Will Myers, and Jason knows the Rays as well as anybody that I get to talk to on a regular basis. I mean, something about Will Myers does seem a little off. Like, the fact that he didn't get to that top level with the Rays after that great Rookie of the Year campaign, I know injuries were a factor, but it seems like something was off in his approach, and approach is mental. I mean, if you're going up there hacking away, that's all mental. That's something you can control as a hitter. You can watch tape. You can work with the hitting coach. There's lots of things you can do to change that, and he didn't make those adjustments. And again, I know that the wrist injury might have sapped his power, but I'm not convinced that he's going to be the player people expected him to be a few years back. Might still be a very solid guy, something that's 250, 260, and 20 home runs annually, but I don't know if he's going to be much more than that in the long run. It's like the Rays are one of those four or five teams. If they move a player, I tend to think that that player has a flaw of some kind.
I've said it before. I think he's got weak pitch recognition. He swings at everything. There's a lot of swing and miss in a long swing. I've never been on his bandwagon. I think he'll be an average player and not much better unless he learns to make adjustments and recognize pitches better. You can get him out on sliders and curveballs, and he's got a vicious cut. And your pitcher takes advantage of that.
I'm going to give him a B minus right now. I think Souza alone could bump that grade up to like a B plus.
Yeah, and he's a good ball player.
If the long-term players they acquired pan out, it becomes an A off season for the Rays. But for this year, it's kind of a B minus until we get a look at Souza as an everyday player. Two more teams to cover here, Bernie, before we wrap things up. Let's talk about the Orioles. It's been somewhat quiet in Baltimore to this point, and last year they were the team that took that flyer on Nelson Cruz. They were handsomely rewarded. Really, they haven't done much of anything to make significant additions, but I feel like one thing we've discussed that is likely to happen is a trade with the Padres. The Padres still have that excess of outfielders. Maybe it's a guy like Carlos Quinton who could go into Baltimore and serve as the DH and provide that power that they used to get from Nelson Cruz. I just look at them, I don't know if I can give them anything more than a D because they've been so inactive.
I agree with you. Right now, Christian Walker is their first baseman, and they can move Chris Davis over there and bring in Quinton and solve a lot of problems. I cannot even grade them. I feel so bad for the Orioles fans that this happened to them. This is really tough. They are all banking on Machado coming back healthy, Weeder's coming back healthy. They feel like they didn't have to give up anything to get those two guys back. I still think they are not the club that they were last year, anything close to it. Cruz is a huge loss. Say what you will, a lot of strikeouts there, but those home runs were just amazing.
On further review, I'm giving the Orioles an F. They really haven't done anything. And I know Machado coming back from the injury and Weeder's coming back from the injury, those are big additions without having to make any moves. But in order to stay atop the AL East, you can't sit on your hands, especially with the Red Sox, Yankees, and Rays all making some adjustments and even Toronto going out and making a big splash. I think right now it's an F, but the Orioles aren't done. So that won't be their final offseason grade, but it's certainly their current offseason grade. Consider this the midterm or the progress report, I guess, if you will, as we move through this offseason. Let's talk about Toronto, Bernie. They acquired Michael Saunders as part of that Jay Happ deal. They made the trade, getting rid of Adam Lind early in the offseason to the Brewers, getting Marco Estrada back as part of that swap. bullpen looks very similar to what it did a year ago. Their big addition, Josh Donaldson, is part of that blockbuster deal with the A's, and Russell Martin via free agency. Is this a complete team as constructed, or do the Blue Jays still have more work to do?
They need one more starter. They need one more guy in the pen. But the guys they added to the lineup, this is another club that you can't navigate through. This is going to be very, very tough on pitchers when you've got to go Reyes, Martin, Bautista, Encarnacion, Donaldson, and Navarro and Saunders in there. This is a very tough ball club. This is clearly a B for me. They are dangerous. They are flat out dangerous.
I'm going to give them the A-. I think this is a pretty big offseason for them so far. Even though the contract for Russell Martin is too expensive, in my opinion, I never would have given him that contract. It really stabilizes their catching situation for a long time, and they didn't have a good prospect coming up there. A.J. Jimenez is still a couple of years away, and I don't know if he's going to be an everyday guy for them anyway. Martin's that proven commodity that can hit near the top of the lineup, maybe help make up for the loss of Melky Cabrera. I think they bought low on Michael Saunders, moving out of Seattle into Toronto. He could surprise, maybe get back to being something close to a 2020 type player. And the Donaldson addition is absolutely huge. I'm with you. They need one more starting pitcher and they need one more bullpen arm. But I think they had a pretty big offseason so far, and I'm willing to give the Jays an A-.
I agree with you. I think this, the American League was far more active than the National League. We'll talk about the NL next week. But these are earth-shaking deals in the AL, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll review them again right after spring training to see what has happened in the spring. Because right now, it's all on paper.
Absolutely. Now, Bernie, before we sign off, what's coming up over at MLBpipeline.com and Bernie's baseball world here over the next few days?
New series starts for me on Pipeline. I will be going over all of the players, team by team, who are on the cusp of making the major leagues. At some point during the season, these guys that I write about could be in big league uniforms. So it's prospects that are on the cusp of big league ball.
All right, definitely check that out. It's magazine season here at RotoWire. If you want to sign up for the magazine, pre-order that, you can do that at rotowire.com/magazine. That's where my attention will be focused for most of the next 10 days as we finalize that project and get ready here for the 2015 season. That's going to wrap things up for this episode of Short Hops. Views and opinions of Short Hops are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast, please contact Shannon at rotowire.com. Bernie, it's been a pleasure as always. Look forward to grading the NL with you next week.
Thanks, DVR. Have a great week. Happy New Year, everyone. Be safe in 2015. Baseball is right around the corner. The next 2 months are going to fly by. But stick with us on Short Hops, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Give us a follow on Twitter, at Short Hops, at Derek Van Riper, at Bernie Pleskoff. We'll keep you updated with the schedule here in the coming weeks. Things will be a little bit in flux around the magazine, but should have an episode out each and every week. Thanks for listening. Take care.